I'm delighted to be here today with Antonio Calzada, Executive Managing Director and Vice President of Fundación Repsol, where he's responsible for organizing and coordinating projects that carry out Repsol's commitment to corporate social responsibility. A native of Portugal, he started his career at Exxon before joining Repsol, where he held a variety of roles, including as member of the Downstream Executive Committee, CEO of Repsol Commercial, and chairman of Repsol Portugal. Antonio, welcome to IMD.
Thank you very much, Sophie. It's a great pleasure and it's an honor for me to be here today in this interview.
I'm very grateful for your time. I have two sets of questions to discuss today, and I hope we can have a lively and provocative conversation. So my first question concerns the role of corporations and their setting up of separate foundations. These foundations are becoming an increasingly visible and important vehicle for philanthropic activities of corporations. Why do you think an increasing number of multinational companies are establishing foundations?
Well, I think this is a very good question, Sophie. Although this and there is not a clear answer for that, but I think that basically there are two main reasons. The first one is that most of the corporations, they are realizing that we need to create more engagement, okay, and more commitment of the people regarding social impact and social activities. So I think now, for one reason, I think this is much more about a trend also, okay, an internal trend. You need to feel that your people is more and more engaged and committed with social aspects of the activity of the companies. This is the first thing. And the second one, I think, is more also to make more clear that you have a focus on social activities. And this is not just, you know, a matter of corporate social responsibility or aspects of ESG compliance. Okay, so let us see that making this a bit more separate, it's going to be more visible on one side, and secondly, because this has a potential to create more commitment and more engagement of your people. For me, these are basically the two reasons. Having said that, I don't think this is, I'm not necessarily in agreement with that. I mean, I think that the main purpose is to put the things together, okay? It's not because you need to give more visibility that you need to create a foundation. I mean, I think that the story, when you look for the story of the philanthropy activity along 50 or 100 years, you can see there is a movement, and this is part of this trend line, which is philanthropy as it was in the past, then a movement to the venture philanthropy, I mean Muhammad Yunus philosophy and venture philanthropy, and then the financial world coming to this and this impact investing, which I'm very critic about the theme, which is impact investing. I think if you are creating a very good investment, doesn't matter if it's a very good investment that is coping with economic sustainability, impact sustainability, environment sustainability, it will create impact. So I do not think there is a good investment and impact investing. I mean, both can converge, and we may be talking about the same thing. But basically, the reasons why the companies are doing this, I think, is about commitment and engagement from one side, and the second one is about focus, because companies are realizing that you need now, more than ever, you need to demonstrate that you are not, this is not some sort of, it's not social washing or greenwashing or people washing whatsoever.
Very interesting. Thank you, Antonio. Indeed, I really appreciate your point about this idea of commitment on one end and visibility on the other end. And actually, you touched on my next question with your last comment, which is sometimes corporations get bad reputation in the sense of relegating their positive impact activities to the activities of the foundation while, you know, doing business as usual in the main corporation. And so maybe you can elaborate a little bit on what you think of these claims, especially as you're very avant-garde in your view of reconciling everything, you know, maybe within one entity. So what do you say to these claims about the bad reputation and the separation of impact and business?
Well, first of all, let us recognize that some of those claims are partially true. Okay, and basically this is not because of any bad intention from any corporation. I mean, this is not about that. I mean, this is basically, according to my experience, is also because of lack of focus. I mean, when sometimes you hear that, it creates a bit of confusion. But basically, what I think that has been happening in the past, and this is something which I believe that is in a process of transformation regarding the future, is much more about that when you have a mainstream of certain types of business, okay, you keep going, you know, in these directions. And sometimes what is happening is that all the social aspects, which most of time, sometimes you are doing lots of social impact, and you are not even recognizing or demonstrate to the society that you are doing all of this social impact. Okay, so now I think this bad reputation, I think that, I mean, it's a bit this is maybe partially true, but I think the big challenge right now is to make this conversion. We need to converge on this, and I think that with the ESG policies, with the with the objectives of sustainability, with the internal policies of the companies, now I think this has been progressively getting better. I think that regarding the future, we will see less complaints against this, social washing or things like that. I believe that in the past, and let us go back 10, 15, 20 years ago, no more than that, okay? You could see that the corporate social responsibility probably was just highlighting some of the things which was probably, you know, just backing up some image objectives, all right? And now I think, because we're living here in this company, and I'm seeing this in the market basically, and the things have been changing, because now the metrics to see and to validate that what you are doing is or it's not, and I think this is now much more internalized in the companies. So yeah, in some way I believe this is a criticism that is there, okay? But there are lots of work that has been done on this, and I think that this journey from corporate social responsibility to ESG targets is putting much more accountability in both sides. That means this is putting much more accountability on the mainstream of the businesses, and it's putting more accountability on the social front of all of this. Because sometimes people tend to confuse, and the people think that if you are in the mainstream of business, I mean, is 100% mainstream of business, social is a different thing. Or if you are in the social side of the activity, you think that accountability is not a problem. And I'm totally against this concept. I think that you need to put accountability on the social, and you need to put social on the mainstream of the businesses.
I love that. Thank you so much. I think it's really important to think in terms of a trajectory, as you said, right? So 10, 15 years ago, thanks for giving us a time frame. We were talking about the first, you know, the first era of CSR, mostly as a maybe as a marketing tool or making sure that the image of the corporation was reflected appropriately with the stakeholders, right? Mostly intangible, let's say. Now we're in the second phase where we have better metrics. There is accountability, key word to the conversation today. And so as we try to, you know, we corporations in general trying to have a positive impact on society, try to have better focus, the work of impact has been structured as separately through the foundation that we're going to talk about today. What I wish to see in a third phase is this integration that you talked about, with better engagement of the social impact and the corporation, and better engagement with perhaps the communities in which the corporations are embedded. And so leading with that, I wanted to ask how you see big corporations like Repsol manage the balance between making money for their shareholders today, there's also this time frame component, with also feeling responsible and accountable for the social and environmental costs that eventually corporations will have to internalize in the long term. How do you think about that, and how do you act on that at Repsol?
Look, Sophie, it's a very, very good question. Thank you very much. Look, I think that the first answer to your question is that besides the strategy or what is behind the strategy of a company, and in our company, I mean, I don't think this is even, this is not even an option, okay? So, I mean, you have to make it. Having said that, I think that as far as ESG is concerned, I think ESG is no longer a compliance. ESG is business, is about business, okay? So this already means that if it's about business, ESG, that means it has to be sustainable on the business front side, has to be sustainable on the social front side, and it has to be sustainable on the environment front side. So having said that, there are three, four, maybe five things which I believe that must be as the backstage of all of that. The first one is that as a corporation, you need to have a trust. You need to believe that you have to do it. Okay, so this part is not about management. It's about leadership. Okay, so you need to have a deep trust on this. We have to do it, and we will do it. Maybe we will have some failures, and then we have to make some adjustments. We have to do it. This is the first thing. The second one, this must be yes or yes. This must be inside your strategy. Must be inside your strategy. Okay. The third one is that this has to be on the deployment of this strategy. That means when you are measuring the metrics of your mainstream businesses, of your main deliveries in terms of the company, you need to measure also very clearly what are the impacts that you are generating. This is the third thing. The fourth one is that you need to engage the company and the foundation, the business and the social. You need to, this has to be part of the main processes inside the company that should affect talent and development of people. So that means you need to have the bright people, people that wants to go through a career, can pass through your social part of the business or the foundation, whatsoever. This is not because this is foundation or this is outside of a foundation. So you need to bring young blood, young motivation, energy, young people to the soul of the foundations. This is very, very important. I mean, in this foundation, for example, we We have made mobility, internal mobility of 70%, 70% in 3 years. And we got down the average age of 55 to 42 in 3 years. Okay. And we put the foundation in the same systems and the same development of careers of the people in the same office in the headquarters of the company and trying to stick together with all the corporate policies, the corporate strategy, and even the different business units of the company. So this is also something that then you need to make sure is that you are part of the mainstream of your company. Okay, so this should not be an island. If you put all this activity with a foundation, without a foundation, I don't care. This is not the discussion. Foundation, not foundation. But if you put this activity or this foundation in a sort of an island, you will behave like an offshore and they will be treating you as an offshore. So the thing is that you need to build up all these bridges and this has to be deeply connected, okay, with your company. I mean, this is very important when you have young people working in a foundation and you can, for example, give opportunities in terms of career development. And these people, after passing the foundation, they continue their career in the company, in other parts of the company, in other business units or corporate units of the company. So I think that this is basically, you need to put all these things, part of same strategy, all the metrics and the delivery, the same systems, same policies, because this is what will make you part of something much bigger. You will not be an exception, okay? You will not be just this small part for a good photograph, for a good report, for the yearly report, okay?
Antonio, thank you so much for this very interesting answer. I really appreciate the points you made about trust, aligning strategy and policies, and also coherence for some of your employees who perhaps will go from working in the foundation to working in the corporation, and the importance of having those integrated and aligned. We've been talking about impact quite broadly so far, and now in my next question, I would like to zoom in on the amazing initiatives that you are conducting at Fondation Repsol. In particular, it seems to me that under your leadership, you have transformed the activities of the foundation from a pure philanthropic one to one that is really focused on investing in viable businesses that are targeted at having a positive societal impact. Can you tell us a bit more about that transformation and why that transformation?
Well, yes. I mean, maybe it will take us just a little bit of time to explain, you know, in a quite brief story. But yes, I mean, we are doing lots of things in terms of impact investing. We are helping to scale up different businesses in four vertical buildings or four lines of business. First of all, we decide to make two things, just to try to make this story brief. We try to develop a much more modern foundation, first of all. This was my primary concern. I mean, is let us try to see what the modern foundation all over the world are doing, and let us make this sort of benchmark. And I saw different things, not only in the corporate foundations in Europe, but also Central Europe and in the United States. So this is something that this was not pure inspiration. I mean, I saw some good examples where I saw that there was a sort of a closing gap between company, the mainstream of the company, and the policies and the strategy of new foundations. So my primary objective was, let us try to transform and to make this foundation much more modern. This was the first one. The second one, I had this clear in my mind since the very first minute, is that Because I was coming from the mainstream of the businesses, so I thought and I had the feeling and I had the trust that there is no other option than to bring the activity of the foundation close and close and closer of the mainstream of the corporation and his businesses. Okay, so we need to share strategy and we need to be part of the same strategy. And because of that, and because my company has been leading a good storyline in terms of energy transition, we have been the first company all over the world to make this claim that we're going to be net zero in 2050, but not only, as you know, as a major long-term strategy. We have set a roadmap to be net zero in 2050 with the targets, very clear targets on the 2025, 40, and so on. So my idea was, let us try that our activity should be aligned with the company strategy, which is energy transition and society. Okay, so we are doing here to develop activities on the social front, but we need to be aware and very conscious that our company is about the energy transition and climate change. So you need to put these two things together. First thing. So then after that, we decide what vertical buildings we should be working with. And the first one was emissions reduction, activity reforestation. Reforestation because we want to recover forest masses, to regenerate biodiversity. But at the same time, we are looking for another possibility, another potential of compensate carbon footprint. And this will be part of the future carbon trading, because this is something that is here. It's here and it will be here for the next 100 years or more. So the first vertical building was emissions reduction, and we jump into this new sector, let's put it this way. The second one was about sustainable mobility with the last mile delivery of packaging with vulnerable people, which is something that is also very much related with the problem that all our big urban systems have, and this also was in alignment with the company that we have a strong strategy in mobility. So we want to create this vertical building about delivery of packaging, I mean sustainable mobility in delivering packaging in the center of the cities. The third one is about circular economy. So we enter into industrial activities to make the recovery of electronic and electrical devices, because everybody's talking about the circular economy equal to plastic. And I say circular economy is equal to plastics plus digital plus electronic plus electrical stuff. So we made a NewCo with a company here in Spain. This is a big social group. And this is the third vertical building. And the fourth one is about energy efficiency, where we have two companies participated. So right now, we have five investees. And the first one, for example, in terms of the reforestation activity, this is a company that has multiplied its value 33 times in 3 years. Okay, so 33 times in 3 years, and we are now making big scale projects of reforestation in Spain. We are now starting in Portugal, and this is part of something that is deeply, absolutely, this is new economy, full ESG, new economy, low carbon, full ESG, strong impact, because we are developing new forest masses, we are regenerating nature, new forests, but at the same time, we are creating local economy, very much local economy, and we are giving training and employment for thousands of people, okay? So this is pure ESG in terms of sustainable on the economic side because it's very much sustainable. It's very much sustainable on the social front and environment for sure. So I think this is an example, okay? So this is as far as the social impact activity. I mean, in terms of new companies, we are helping them as we are working as if we were an asset management in terms of trying, you know, to see the business plans and the delivery and the accountability. So we are helping these younger companies, bit of a startup format. We are trying them to go through this scaling up business. So some of them are doing, some of them have more difficulties, but this is about business as the other day-to-day business. Okay, so this is first one. The second one is that we created a very strong platform about is a sort of a think tank, a big think tank on energy transition and knowledge about energy transition. And this is a digital platform called Open Room. In Open Room, we have more than 20,000 people, more than 20,000 people registered. And here, this is multi-format for multi-stakeholder that we are trying to launch. We are now we are doing something like 50 or 60 events a year, physical, digital, hybrid, depends. But this is a very, very good platform that it's basically to launch to the society more knowledge about the energy transition. We are not in here to deliver the Repsol message. We are basically, because the name of Open Room is exactly this one, we want to put this very open to the society to see that the political side, the business side, the academic side, they should find in this digital platform a way to send messages, clear messages, rigorous scientific messages to the society. So this is Open Room. Below Open Room, we have a network of chairs with different universities. We have now 5 university chairs. One is basically related with carbon capture with the university in Barcelona. The second one is about advanced and sustainable mobility with the Polytechnic of Madrid. Then we have decarbonization of industry with the IKI, which is a very reputable company. University in Spain. Then we have an hydrogen share with the Navarra, Pamplona. And then we have circular economy with Basque Country. And next month, we will launch the 6th university share in Lisbon. And it's about decarbonization of cities. Okay, so these are a network of university shares where we want 3 things. The first one, each of these university shares, they should see what is the benchmark, the status of the art in terms of every one of these single technologies. The status of the art is not to invent the wheel again. It's just to see where is the status of the art on a worldwide basis. The second one is that we are looking for these university shares to get the microphone and to connect with the societies. I mean, we want something, you know, in and out. And this is very important because we expect that the academy needs to say what is clear to say on the scientific, on the technology front, not on the political side. Okay, so this is the university network of shares. And below that, we have another platform, which is called Repsol Thinkers with Z. It's not Repsol Thinkers with T, it's Repsol Thinkers with Z. And this is basically a digital platform to teach energy transition and climate change to the basic schools. Right now, with this digital platform, we have almost 3,500 schools in Spain, which is 14% market share, in which 80% are public schools. And what we are doing there is that there is a very strong program that you can, this is to teach energy transition and climate change to everybody for the younger people. Okay, so our objective here is to have something very structured, okay, where every teacher in every school in Spain, if they want to teach energy transition and climate change, everything is there. So you can decide if you want to talk about renewables, if you want to talk about conventional fuels, nuclear, hydrogen, whatsoever is there. But on top of that is aligned with the official programs in Spain, which is also very interesting mean and a good help for most of the public schools where basically they do not have means to do that, okay? So this is Repsol Zinkers. And I think that when you put all these things together, I mean, from one side is our focus and ambition and decision to go through this new economy, low carbon, full ESG with strong social impact, which is Repsol Social Impact with these five small companies that are investees by ourselves. And then on top of that, you have this big think tank with the open room, the network of shares, and the Repsol Zinkers as a basic program. All of that plus our social project, we are trying with all of that, we are trying to engage also the thousands of Repsol employees in order to engage them to volunteering activities, which I think that if you ask me what could be the ambition in that part, I would say that one employee equal to one volunteer, okay? But at the end of, yeah, and then from 3,000 volunteers, which is basically what we have right now, we should have in the future 25,000 volunteers. But having said that, I don't think the question and the issue is not to have 25,000 volunteers. The thing is that the volunteers should be part of the things that you are doing. I mean, this is not something that you should do, you know, for a good selfie to hang in Instagram. This is something that should be part of your day-to-day business. This should be part of your normal day of business, which is basically the ESG activity, the mainstream of the businesses, the social part of the business. They should be put together. So they should live together. This is a bit of my point.
We know that entrepreneurs are an important driver of change. Can you tell me a bit more about the Entrepreneurs Fund of Repsol Foundation?
The Entrepreneurs Fund of Repsol is it's an activity that has been driving along these last 10, 11 years. And what we are doing here is that we are launching every year a sort of a call to see where are startups on energy transition that are available and ready for, you know, for acceleration and for scaling up. So we are touching areas of hydrogen, circular economy, electrical mobility, etc., decarbonization, etc. And the thing is that with this Entrepreneurs Fund, with these 10 years, we have, I would say, a very positive tracking record, because we have accelerated something around 70 startups. These 70 startups, when they went to the market looking for funding, they got more than 450 million euros. And the important thing here is that approximately 80% of all of these startups, they are alive. Which is very interesting, because when you look for acceleration of startups, normally this dead valley, okay, ends up with 5% or 10%. And why we are doing this? When we are doing this, because we have a big team of mentors, which is basically people that has been working Repsol in some years ago. Now they are pre-retired or even retired people, very much experts in his areas of refining, commercial operations, logistics, technology, etc. So they are giving a part of their time with very rigid programs. They are giving their time to helping and to support all these young entrepreneurs. These plus the funds that we are giving, because we are giving 2 years of free money to these new startups. This, at the end, has been creating, I would say, a reasonable story of success around the Entrepreneurs Fund, which is very much recognized on an international basis, because in at least in energy, in the energy industry, the Entrepreneurs Fund of Repsol Foundation has been creating some brand.
I'm really, really impressed by the depth and the alignment of your strategic thinking between what the foundation is doing and what the corporation is doing. Also, the depth of your impact, like the layers that you worked us through, is really fascinating, and I think quite novel, innovative. So congratulations. I mean, this is, I really mean it. I think it's very impressive. Of course, you know, I'm touched by the fact that you're including academia and academic thinkers, I shall say, you know, in this transformation and in this impact activities that you're doing. You mentioned 5 investees, these companies. How do you select them? I mean, I got the point on the alignment. You made that very clear. But what are some of your selection criteria? And my second, you know, my second question here would be, what are some of the metrics that you look at for selection, but also for success? I think, you know, we're all around the world thinking about impact measurement and how to, you know, how to put figures that make sense. So what are some of your learned experiences in that area of measuring success?
Well, it's a very good question. Actually, Sophie, we do not have the we do not have the Coca-Cola formula for that. But basically,
share it. If you had, you should share it. Yeah, I know Coca-Cola
The first thing is that we are doing a sort of a screening of small companies or startups. They should have, and this is a criteria, this is go, no go, pass or no pass. And this is about, they have to be in one of these 4 vertical buildings. This has to be, this is a go, no go, okay? So there are some other fantastic sectors and areas of activity, but we are looking basically for emissions reductions, sustainable mobility, circular economy, and energy efficiency. Has to be in one of these segments, let's put it this way. So this is the first thing. The second one for us is that we are looking always for, and this makes this thing a bit more complex and difficult. And this, I'm telling this is, if there are people interested in make this journey, this is just a warning, okay? And that you need to be very conscious that it's going to be complex, because you need to find small startups, younger companies, pre-commercial, commercial. This is not the big issue, but they have to show, present, and you need to find evidences that you have an economic potential to make this sustainable, but much bigger. I mean, I think big companies must conduct and drive big businesses, big projects, okay? So you need to look for these small companies, always having in your mind that you will scaling up this as much as you can, okay? On the economic side, okay? And it has to be sustainable. Don't make this a subventioned business after 1, 2, or 3 years. So the first one. The second one, at the same time, it has to have social impact and social impact scale-up potential. That means when you are in reforestation, you can start having 150 people employee, trained and employee to plant the forests, to maintain the forest. But you have to keep in mind that your target is to have 10,000, not 1,000. 10,000 people, okay? If you are delivering packages in the center of the cities with vulnerable people, you start with 80 or with 100, which was our case, with 85 small micro hubs for these micro logistics. And then you need to go to 300, 500 micro hubs. And then you will have 1,000, 1,500 people trained and employed. This is social impact. It has to be at the same time, this is your second account. This is your second accounting accountability. And the third one, which is even a bit of a consequence of the first two, is the environment impact. So if we have to put metrics on this, it's very easy. It's like a normal business. This is about sustainable euros. This is about a sustainable number of employees. Okay. And this is about sustainable tons of CO2 recovered or that you are changing these or because you are reducing or because you are compensating or you are simply avoiding these emissions. So this is about economy, this is about social, and this is about environment. And you need to put these three things together. So our criteria to select a company, okay, we are not going just, you know, looking a startup that is very promising in terms of scaling up, increasing value, etc. It's a bit more complicated than that, but you can do it. I mean, the thing is that you need to be very strong, very strict in the metrics of the old economy. I mean, you need the metrics of the old economy to guarantee that then if these things really scale up, you will have stronger economic delivery to refurnish, to retrofit, okay, the main purpose. Okay, we are not developing these activities, you know, to send the dividends to our shareholders. This is basically is a bit, you know, just to retrofit the main purpose. So the second criteria for me, it's very important. It has to be these three angles, okay, to select the companies.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Thank you for that. And it seems like, you know, we may not have the recipe for the famous beverage, but it seems like you have this recipe for impact on multiple fronts. And in particular, you emphasize the scale element, right? Which we hear a lot as being important, which of course makes sense because societal issues come at scale. We're many billion people on this planet, and there's a variety of issues, and including the environment. I'm wondering, since you've been giving that a lot of thought, if you had a message for other corporations and foundations, hopefully aligned in their strategies, to view the risk that is associated with investing in these companies. As you made clear, it's not for shareholder dividends. The purpose is different and yet aligned with the corporation strategy. Do you have a message for them to encourage them maybe to view the risk differently? I know of companies that don't enter that game, so to speak, because of the risk. And so what can we tell them? And I'm asking that because I think the scale recipe, big companies have that. They have figured it out. So if we can scale the impact, they have a real big, important role to play. So what can we share and what can you share from your experience with other corporations?
Look, the first thing, Sophie, is that my message, okay? My first message is, please don't panic, go ahead, okay? Don't panic, go ahead. Because sometimes, lots of times in our life, you know, conducting businesses, managing businesses whatsoever, is that there is something like this, there is no penalty for no decisions, okay? So my first message is, please, no panic, go ahead. The second thing, which I believe it's very important, is that when you keep this scaling up a bit separate from the mainstream, the first thing that you get is speed. Because you get speed. I mean, you get much more speed because you are not embedded in very long processes of decision making. Because sometimes if you are dealing in a world of startups, younger companies, pre-commercial, just commercial, even sometimes they are not Series A for investment. So, I mean, they are in a different ecosystem, so they cannot resist the very long decision timing process that you have in the big corporation. So then you have a certain reason and a certain number of arguments to keep this separate. So this is the main thing. No, then the thing of this risk or no risk. I think that to clarify what could be the risk and the solution to avoid or to mitigate this risk? I think that you need to look for the top down in terms of your own strategy. I mean, what is the purpose? What is the strategy? How is deployed? And what is the impact that you are creating? So I do not think that there should be any problem if you, out of a foundation, are scaling up a company that is doing fantastic activity, creating thousands of jobs, okay, creating local social impact and recovering nature. So I think that this is the thing is that you need to keep very clear that you have a certain number of business lines in your company that they are basically with their strategy very much aligned, you know, for the shareholders, for the dividends, etc. And you have the other part of the business which can be very much close. Yeah, and they are reinforcing the major purpose of your company. Or the other thing is that if you are taking, you know, dividends to spread out over your shareholders, but you do not have this thin line, this, say, red thin line, I think that we need to be flexible enough and to understand that there is a new world coming in. There is a new, you know, mentality. ESG is clearly an evolution, a positive evolution of the former corporate social responsibility. ESG is no longer compliance. ESG is now much more about business. So if ESG is about business, the purpose of a foundation, the purpose of the company, they should stay close, maybe not absolutely, you know, mixed up. But then for that, I mean, you can clarify the things. And I do not see, I think that sometimes some of these risks or so-called risks are much more defensive arguments, in my viewpoint,
Yeah, that's great. So leading with purpose and having purpose as part of your strategy would help these leaders think about ways in which they're allowed and they're allowing themselves as decision makers to actually take the risk to invest in those, you know, high impact, high scalability.
Look, I think Sophie, look, just something that it just came to my mind. When you look, for example, I mean, sometimes we are much more worried about the problem instead of thinking about the solution. What could we think when the financial system is now much more close to everything related with social impact, with everything related with environment impact, and there is no risk? I think there is a risk, but I think it's not to be more risky or not risky. Is that because you do not have other option? I mean, the world needs that we do this. You need to bring lots of financial support to the social activities, and we need to put this together and join with environmental targets. And at the end, we will get a better world if we do this in this way. So I do not think that we should be here, you know, making big theories again in order of too much risk or not too much risk. That is the main purpose. I think companies and society and the families and the citizens, we need a better world. We need a better world, you know, with much more sustainability. Not sustainability in the paper, in the PowerPoint. I mean, we need sustainability in our real life. And this is about, you know, the things we are doing, the businesses we are conducting, the way we are behaving. So I think this is much more an opportunity, you know, than a weakness.
This is great. Yes, a license to play, a license to act, embracing the complexity, as you mentioned earlier, and acting together, building these coalitions of multiple stakeholders and together improving and making our world better. Antonio, I mean, it's been a pleasure. You've covered so much with your rich answers. I want to give you a chance to add any insights if you have any. But otherwise, I've learned so much, and I'm very grateful. And we are, you know, collectively very grateful for the work that you're doing. And so keep leading with that purpose.
Thank you very much, Sophie. Thank you very much for the interview. And I I hope that this can help people, all these people that may have some doubts about go, no go. And my recommendation is please go, please fail. If you fail, you will learn, and if you learn, you will learn and you will do better next time. So let's keep going.
Yeah, be entrepreneurial together. Absolutely. Well, thank you, Antonio. Really appreciate your time and your insights.
Thank you very much for you all. Thank you.
Thank you.
My pleasure.